This episode is brought to you by Chris Salee, your local health markets insurance agency. Creative solutions for your health, Medicare, and life insurance needs. Personalized advice at 503-678-5768.
Today's episode is also brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back, with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Hey friends, and welcome to this episode of the Canby Current. I am your host, James Walton. Let's read the news. Longtime Lieutenant George Tro will become Canby's new chief of police following the retirement of current chief Brett Smith next year, the city announced Monday. The decision to install Tro well in advance of Smith's retirement will allow Canby PD to, quote, begin the important next steps of transitioning into this new leadership, City Attorney Joe Lindsay said, as well as hiring or promoting a new lieutenant. Tro has been with Canby Police for 23 of his almost 25 years in law enforcement. He's been the agency's de facto number two for 15 of those years, and he served as interim chief for 15 months before Smith was hired. Tro is a graduate of the FBI National Academy and holds the highest certification from the Oregon Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. He is also a longtime and very active community member, having lived in Canby for 3 decades and serving on the boards of directors for the Canby Center, Canby Rotary Club, and various local sports organizations, as well as school budget committees. His wife, Karen Tro, is a nurse who grew up here and went through Canby schools. They have 2 grown kids who also went through the Canby school system. He's the son of Cuban immigrants that came to America in 1959 with his 2 older sisters, Lindsay said. He has a servant's heart and a shining example of hard work, dedication, and service. Chief Smith announced his retirement at the September 2nd Canby City Council meeting, officially effective at the end of that month, though he would remain in place through a workback arrangement until April 1st, 2021. Smith has served as Canby's chief since January 2010, following a nearly 29-year career with the Portland Police Bureau, where he retired as an assistant chief. Voter apathy and procrastination are the scourges of every local election official, but it appears that will not be a problem this year. Clackamas County received back a record 47,875 ballots by mail and drop sites Tuesday, just 6 days after they were first sent out to registered voters. Coupled with the 9,938 that were returned in early voting, which includes active duty military and absentee ballots, 57,813 Clackamas Countyans have already participated in the November 3rd election, a stunning 18.7% turnout, already for the county's some 308,000 registered voters. By way of comparison, only 18.6%, or 53,000 voters, cast ballots for school boards and other special districts in the countywide election last May. The turnout is almost 4 times higher than at this point during the 2016 presidential election. On that first Tuesday after ballots had gone out, only 13,940 had been returned, the equivalent of a 5.2% turnout. The county received almost as many ballots on Tuesday of this week alone, almost 14,000, not counting early voting or Monday's record poll of 34,001. Turnout for the general election 2 years ago was even lower than in 2016, but that's typical for midterms. At this point in the 2018 election cycle, just 2.8% of voters, 8,000, had cast ballots. Statewide, the 2016 general election saw a record number of votes cast, 2,051,452, though the percentage of registered voters who turned out, 80.3%, was not the highest ever. That mark was actually surpassed by the three previous presidential elections. In 2012, 82.8%, 2008, 85.7%, and 2004's near record turnout of 86.5%. The highest percentage turnout in Oregon's history was in 1960, as 779,159 of the state's 900,627 registered voters, that's a total of 86.5%, visited the in-person polls to help spur Senator John F. Kennedy's narrow defeat of the incumbent Vice President Richard Nixon. For the latest local elections update, stay tuned to our website, canbefirst.com. The building was once known for helping bring electricity to thousands of households and businesses in Canby, but soon it will be filled with a very different kind of energy, 3- and 4-year-olds. The former headquarters of Canby Utility at 154 Northwest 1st Avenue is about to become a preschool, Nani's Village. Owner and director Stephanie Whitmore says both its name and guiding philosophy come from her grandmother. Though Whitmore grew up in Virginia, she spent her summers at Nani's farm in Beaver Creek, learning to cook and can. "She was just the most wonderful person who ever lived, as far as I'm concerned," Whitmore tells Now Hear This Canby. "She always took in kids whenever anybody needed help. She loved children, and I learned so much from her about community and helping people." Those lessons will play a central role at Nani's Village, which carries the motto, "It takes a village to raise a child." "The community, helping each other, that's what we're all about," Whitmore says. "I love Canby, and we're so glad to be able to start this model here, which we hope to create in other towns as well." And it's not only Nani's life lessons that Whitmore will be relying upon. "We're going to be using a lot of her recipes for the kids," she said. "At Nani's, two homemade healthy meals and snacks will be available each day. My dad will be helping cook, so that will be fun. She was famous for her chicken and dumplings and peach cobbler." The building is currently undergoing renovations as it does not have an opening date. Whitmore hopes to begin operating in a month, by mid-November. Nani's preschool will be classroom-based and will initially have staffing and capacity for two classes of up to 18 preschoolers, though she believes the facility could ultimately house as many as 90 to 100 kids, depending on the occupancy granted by the county. The facility also plans to expand its hours eventually and hopes to hear from the community about the services that are most needed for working families. They will be following all of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidelines for mitigating the spread of the coronavirus, she said, including the wearing of face coverings for staff, screening employees and children for symptoms and temperature, and daily deep cleanings. "We're coming into cold and flu season, of course, so we'll be doing the best we can to keep everybody safe," Whitmore says. "But we're still going to be giving hugs. We need to. Kids need touch." Must have been another lesson she learned from Nani. Don McNamee, a part-time employee at the Canby Fred Meyer, was on her lunch break at the store when she saw the family of dinosaurs saunter by. "I thought it was hilarious," she says of the five people in matching full-body inflatable Tyrannosaurus Rex costumes of varying sizes. Another worker, Stacy Prowan, also spotted the pack of orange theropods and even snapped a cell phone pic from the other side of the candy aisle. "It was an excellent distraction from a hectic day," she said. Modeled after the 2015 blockbuster Jurassic World, the costumes have been a popular prank fodder for years, what with their tiny arms and the comical way their heads flop about when they run. The wearer sees through a piece of clear plastic in the neck, so the costume's head is nothing but air. But they have been a definite comeback this year amid the coronavirus pandemic, with numerous stories of shoppers donning costumes for trips to their local grocery stores being reported across the country. Canby's T-Rex family has been active for just a couple of weeks now, visiting Fred Meyer several times and Safeway once. Their originator, who asked to be identified only by his first name, David, describes it as destiny that he and his family would be at the center of something that is at once so joyful and also so silly. But he admitted it all began with an impulse buy at Spirit Halloween. "My wife works nights and was sleeping in the middle of the day," David told The Current on Facebook via his new Facebook page, Canby Trex Family. "Being the responsible adult of three boys, we went on an excursion, got sidetracked, and next thing you know, we raided my wife's sleeping time and woke her up, all in full costume." David's sons are age 15, 13, and 10, have all accompanied him on their various adventures around town. The matriarch has a costume now as well, but she typically prefers to hang back, document, and observe the reactions from people rather than join the fun, so one of the boys' friends usually subs in her spot. The reactions are indeed something to behold. "Usually, after they finish laughing, they praise us for making their day or thank us and ask for a picture," David says. "The kids' reactions are the best." The family does not don the costumes for their normal shopping trips, David explains. "It is usually just oddball stuff like cookies and candy," he says. "At Safeway, we got pumpkins to carve." "At first, it was a lark, just something fun to do," David says. "Then they saw how it seemed to bring smiles and joy to so many people during a year where, because of the pandemic, wildfires, high unemployment, a divisive election season, distance learning, and so on, stress, depression, and other challenges are on the rise." "Life needs to be a riot," he says. "It should be lived to make every day your best memory. Or, if you can't do that, try to be someone else's. I tell people all the time, when I grow up, I want to be just like me. It is a great thing to like who you are, and I will always be that goofy kid." David says he is working to set up other outings at local businesses and that the family has no intention of hanging up their alter egos anytime soon. "As long as everyone keeps on enjoying it, we will continue." The small group of high school students who traveled to communities in Clackamas County that have been devastated by the Riverside Fire last month thought they knew what they would encounter. Heartbreak, loss, hopelessness, defeat. They were wrong. "The people greeted us with big smiles," said Elliot Shin, a Lincoln High School junior and president and founder of Olivian Bomb, a student-run nonprofit that seeks to bring peace through music. "We all wanted to hug each other so much, but we couldn't due to COVID." On October 4th, Olivian Bomb visited two sites near Estacada ravaged by the Riverside Fire, a private home, with the owner's permission, and the Dodge Community Church. Both were leveled by the blazes that swept through the surrounding forests and countryside and came within a half mile of engulfing the town itself. The group of students presented a virtual concert and are seeking to raise funds for Oregon families who lost their homes to wildfire. "As we gathered before the ruins and began to play Amazing Grace, there was peace. There was hope, and there was a message of a new beginning," Shin said afterwards. Here's what it sounded like.
Hey, Frankie, do you ever wonder why some businesses aren't, like, more transparent?
Oh, yeah. Like, some of the old buildings downtown are so dark. Get some more windows,
no.
You know?
No. I mean, like, transparent as in being open and honest about their business practices.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, DirectLink is a good example. They don't have internet data caps or charge extra fees for high usage.
Oh, yeah. Which is great with all the internet I've been using since this whole COVID situation started.
They also don't charge infrastructure build fees like some other providers. And they're active in our community, too. Check out their philanthropic efforts at directlink.coop/community.
Did you know that they also hold an annual meeting every year where members can talk directly with the board of directors and upper management?
Talk about transparent. You won't see any other companies being that accessible. DirectLink really is here for us. Call 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop to learn more today.
Now Here This Can Be is a podcast that takes us to some unusual places. Today we're reporting from one of my favorite places, which is the Chocolate Room at Puddin' River Chocolates with the owner and founder, Teresa Sassy. Hi, Teresa. Welcome back.
Hi. How are you?
She, of course, is just busy as can be, so we're chatting and watching her. Why don't you tell the listeners what you're doing?
I am packaging what I call an 8-piece quilted box.
They're beautiful with truffles.
Yep, they're just great. And so what I'm doing is I'm going to be making peppermint bark and with white and dark chocolate. So you have to make sure both machines are tempered and the stars align, and then you can put it all together.
Yeah.
And then so I'm just doing a lot of packaging, working on a lot of Christmas stuff.
Right.
It's not too soon for solid chocolate. And fall stuff, so things are crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Things are crazy.
Obviously, Halloween through Christmas is a very busy time for a candy and chocolate maker. Why don't you tell us a little bit, Teresa, about your chocolate? What makes it different?
What makes it different is I do a blend. So I take European chocolate and Spain and Switzerland, and we just do a blend. And so it makes our flavor more unique. And so with doing that, I use different percentages of chocolate. And so it just gives a really good balance.
And that's maybe something people don't realize, that these different sources of chocolate, much like wine and some other kind of artisan type products, have different flavor profiles based on the soil and the climates and things like that.
And the production. You can take chocolate from Venezuela. And you could have the beans from Venezuela could go to Belgium, or they could go to Spain, or they could go to Switzerland, or America. And it just, they're identical. The beans come from the same origin, the same plantation, but it's the way it's processed, just like coffee.
Okay, sure.
That sets the flavor different.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting how it all happens that way.
Yeah.
And I could go on and on. That's a whole nother story and actually an educational class.
Yeah.
But it's a lot. You could relate it to coffee, just different flavor profiles, how high the percentage, how much sugar they take out, how much sugar they put in. Pure chocolate is 100%. 66% is our percentage that we do for our dark chocolate.
Okay.
And so we're using a higher percentage, a 68 or a 70, but we're also using a little lower, and we end up with a 66.
Yeah.
So it just makes the balance wonderful.
Yeah. And what are the other things that go into that when it's not 100%? Is that the sugar?
It would be the sugar, the cocoa butter. They're extracting, when they're processing chocolate or cocoa beans, they're extracting the cocoa butter. They're putting it back in. According to what percentage they want. So the higher percentage on dark chocolate, the less sugar. And milk products are basically nil at that point. Milk chocolate has, of course, more, but dark chocolate doesn't have very much, if very little milk solids or milk fat.
Sure.
So you're putting in lecithin, and that's an emulsifier, and then the sugar and the cocoa butter and the chocolate liqueur.
Yeah. Love it. And I just love, you know, all these exotic places and exotic things all coming through this little shop in Canby.
Right.
Right here in Canby, Oregon, and coming together to make amazing things. Obviously, it has been a challenging year for small business owners and people that are in food production. I wonder if it's helpful, kind of, what you're able to do to make these, you know, things that make people happy and make people smile. Does that give you, help you through some of the challenges?
It's been pretty darn challenging.
Sure.
I feel bad for all of us small businesses. I'll put us all in there together because I have such passion for all of us. Anytime we can reach out and help somebody else, we do that. Because we're all in it together. We really are. pardon me. We had to get a little savvy with when things were a little slow on the chocolate side. I started doing confections.
Mm.
And then I would post it on Facebook or email and start selling confections or bread or rolls
right.
or whatever I needed to do to help fill in for revenue.
Right.
I wasn't going to give up.
Doing deliveries and
We will do deliveries, and we encourage people to go on our website, and there's a coupon or a code that you can put in for pickup.
Yeah.
And you can drive right up to the shop, and we will take it out for you.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's something we'll just continue to offer.
Cool.
We don't want to make anybody feel uncomfortable by any means at all, and so we will walk the extra mile for the customer.
Yeah. I think I accidentally cut you off a little bit, but I'd love to hear about your drive. What keeps you going? You know, you said we weren't going to give up.
My passion for chocolate and for people.
Mm.
I want to make people happy, and when they put a chocolate in their mouth, and it's just the wow factor. It's just the, I just think it's the passion that we have. I absolutely love what I'm doing. I don't give up. We have the perfect scenario that since we moved the shop to the house, so I'm out here 24/7 basically, you know, producing and packaging and whatever needs to be done.
You were already working from home. You didn't even have to transition.
No, it's a short walk. Let me tell you, commute.
You're the only manufacturer that can work from home.
It's so great. And Tyler, you know, it's just magical what we do, and the sky's the limit. You know, I have to try to rein myself in sometimes for, you know, getting ahead. And when I'm super busy with something and I have a lot on my mind, sometimes I will stop and I'll go make a batch of cookies. And the girls all know, you know, she's got a lot on her mind. She's got to sort it out. And so I kind of detour once in a while, have to do that. And sometimes people will just find a plate of cookies on their office desk or something.
Yeah.
You know, we just try to go give back to the community and make people feel good.
Yeah. I love so much about what you and your staff do, because you marry, we talked about the sort of the more chemistry, you know, some of the more left brain kind of stuff you do in the composition and the percentages and all this, the sourcing, all that paperwork kind of things. But then it marries the creativity. You know, I brought my camera out here, and I feel like I just could be out here all day. Just feel like all the different truffles. You never would get bored. You never run out of things to look at. And this is not a huge shop, right?
No, it's
just,
it's not.
There's so many different. So,
but there's just something around every, you know, we just pull out a tray and there you go. You know, it's like, oh, okay, this is what I'm working on today. Or, you know.
Yeah.
Just little things, and you have to find your niche, and so you got to try to find out what is going to work this year for Christmas that maybe didn't last year. And sometimes we'll retire something for a year because it didn't do so good, and we'll bring it back the next year and it booms.
Mm.
So you just don't know what goes on in people's heads. You know, you're like, okay, how come that didn't move last year, but this year you can't keep it on the shelf.
Right.
So we're doing that. We're just reinventing all the time. Packaging, got to stay up with the themes, the colors. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So you do, that is part of your creative process, is kind of looking at trends and what seems to be, what was popular last year, or sort of even kind of trying to predict a little bit.
Yep. You got to keep up on your trends for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you got to do what you do best.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, competition is not always a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, we don't copy people. We do what we do, and we do it to the best of our ability.
Yeah. So what are the kind of things that you're focusing on a little bit this year with the holidays? Anything new or anything that's a greater focus?
Doing a lot of, well, for on the confection side, making a lot of peanut butter pies.
Yeah.
pumpkin bars, you know, we just can't keep that stuff in. I made 120 peanut butter pies the other day, and they're all gone. Mm. So I made 50 more this morning. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, you know. And then on the chocolate side, we're just trying to keep things, you know, up to par. Got a lot of orders, pre-orders for peppermint bark.
Yeah. A lot of trades of that around.
Yeah, the cookies, the shortbread, caramel shortbread cookies with the sea salt. Mm. Cannot keep those in stock. We're just blowing through those.
Yeah.
Those are going to be huge holiday items.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, and then Santas and snowmen and
we'll
adorn our shelves.
Yeah. I know one thing that you like to do, and especially, you know, you've already kind of mentioned it, but as far as business, you know, helping local businesses and whatnot, you guys really try to source as many of your nuts and berries and things locally as you can.
Yes, we do. We get our hazelnuts from Northwest Hazelnuts in Aurora.
Yeah.
And then Andrew at Pacific Hazelnuts in Aurora, he and I work together and collaborate on stuff. He's a great support. And then a lot of Canby businesses, you know, for the holidays especially, they order gift baskets and boxes and product to be. We deliver it to them, and then they pass it out at the holidays, and it works so well. So with the partnership with other businesses, it helps make us a success.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. I remember during the earlier part of the pandemic, something you do more regularly is customer appreciation chocolate bars for businesses and whatnot. But I remember during the pandemic, you did something for Austin's Body Shop.
With the mask.
It was a toilet paper.
It was a toilet paper roll for Tim Austin, and he blew through those.
Yes.
Huge. Yeah. So we do chocolate
Much
bars.
Much like toilet paper itself at that time was going fast.
It was crazy. And so we're doing things like that all the time. We probably just for the chocolate bars, I bet we bring on at least 6 to 10 new clients a year working on custom chocolate bars. I'm working on for 2 new customers right now on it. And it's really fun to design the labels for them and stuff. Mm.
Yeah.
Really fun.
Yeah.
So we're doing a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
And then we do a lot. I have one customer, they go south every year, and he orders 100 dark chocolate bars just to take on the road to pass out to people.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he loves our dark chocolate chocolate bars.
Love it.
So it's really fun to see, and it's, you know, it's spreading.
Right,
you know,
right. So, yeah, spreading the love.
Yeah.
Well, if we can just explain a little bit of some of the background noise of all the wonderfulness that's happening behind us, but can you explain to the listeners this Willy Wonka-ian style chocolate wheel? What is that about?
Yeah, I've got my dark chocolate machine going right now, so that's what you're hearing. And then I've got 2 small white chocolate machines going. And so what I'll do with those, as soon as they temper, and they did beep and tell me they are tempered. So
what's tempered?
And tempered me. It's a crystallization process that happens with the chocolate.
And the other ingredients, or
no, just
chocolate.
Just the chocolate.
Yeah.
So it's a temperature. You get the temperature so high, you dump the seed chocolate in, and you try to get it to crystallize together.
Yeah.
That's a whole other thing also.
That's a texture and a taste part of the process.
Yeah. So what I'm going to be doing is then making peppermint bark, because the dark chocolate goes on the bottom, and then the white chocolate goes on top, and then we sprinkle the peppermint. Crushed peppermint on
that. Cool.
So that's going to happen here in a minute.
Gotcha. So it churns it and heats it.
Yeah. It keeps it.
It's got this
really
cool wheel going.
Right,
that's what kind of looks like Willy Wonka to me. But awesome.
And so that's what that noise is.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. And then I turn my music up loud when nobody's around.
When you don't have a recorder in your face.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, well, Teresa, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you,
and,
Tyler.
And for what you're doing. It is something I appreciate you not giving up. I know that there's a lot of challenges for small businesses now, but this what you guys do brings so much joy to me and my family, and
you.
My wife especially.
Yeah, I bet.
I know,
so. Keep mom happy.
So, yeah. Or nobody's happy, right?
I know, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
So.
And that's needed.
Well,
thank you. Joy and that appreciation.
Yeah. Happy fall. Stay safe.
Yes.
Stay well.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
And eat lots of chocolate.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate, and we got in a carriage ride with the horse, and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months. Sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime. I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me. Three generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? We have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
Canby Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. We are going to finish out this episode with many thanks to our sponsor, Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. They're open daily. You can find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant Street in downtown Canby, or connect with them through email at retrorevivaloc@gmail.com. In honor of the upcoming Halloween holiday, we're taking a short break from our usual stories to revisit a tale that's a bit more appropriate for the season. But a brief content warning before we begin: this segment does contain descriptions of murder and attempted suicide. There are stories that make you feel good, that shed light on the human condition. And there are stories that inspire or help your head rest easier on the pillow when you wake up, sweating in the middle of the night. This is not one of those stories. This is not a happy story. It's not a story where the events can easily be explained or understood, or where the narrative wraps itself up in a nice, neat little bow. All I can tell you is that it's a true story. It really happened. And it happened on a dark morning in mid-September of 1914 in a little cabin near Aurora, nestled among hop fields and fir trees. William's son came home around noon on Tuesday, September 15th, to a quiet house. Unnaturally quiet. How could a house with a wife and two kids, Richard, a wily two-year-old, and Dorothy Virginia, a squirming infant of only 6 months, possibly be so quiet? William, tired after a morning of hard labor in the neighboring hop field where he worked, may have wondered if Florence had taken the children to play at his mother's house down the road. Oh, if only that were the case. William's second clue that something was dreadfully wrong was that both doors were locked, front and back. He pounded on the doors, calling for his wife and son. No answer. He was forced to enter his own home through a window, and when he saw the horror that awaited him inside, I'm sure he wished he hadn't. The house was neat and orderly, everything in their proper place, but quiet. So quiet. "Florence!" he yelled again. No answer. He found his family lying on the bed. The small, still bodies of Dorothy and Richard lay on their mother's lap, dead. Florence, his wife for only 2 years, was barely conscious, clinging to life. The gun that had killed the children, the .38 caliber revolver owned by William, was in Florence's hand. She had killed them. Then she tried to take her own life with 2 shots to the chest. William called for the coroner and the sheriff, who summoned Aurora Dr. B.F. Geisy. What happened was obvious. Florence, who was conscious by then and able to speak, readily admitted to the crime. The mystery was why. William told investigators that his wife had no history of depression or insanity, and that he had noticed nothing unusual in her behavior that morning. She had married Florence in Portland on July 1912. She was 15 years old and had been orphaned at the age of 5. What happened to her parents is unknown, but there is evidence that she and her sister may have been raised by an uncle who was a police sergeant in Portland. Florence had been aiming for the heart when she shot herself, but she missed, barely. When he first examined her, Dr. Giese had offered the grave opinion that he did not expect her to live. He was wrong. Over the weeks and months to come, Florence made a slow and steady recovery, gaining strength and eventually some form of mental clarity about the tragedy that she had caused. Well, clarity is probably not the best word. As I've said, clarity and understanding are not really on the table in this story. She had killed her children out of a fear for their souls, she would later tell friends. She shot her children to protect them from the suffering and the sins of the world, according to a newspaper account. She told them that she loved her children and shot them and herself because she loved them so much and dreaded to see them grow up. Thanks to her, they never would. Florence never expressed remorse for what she had done, at least initially. She spoke of her children as if she had done nothing more than put them to bed, newspapers reported. All is well now, Florence was quoted as telling her husband and friends 2 days after the tragedy. Everything is all right. With a cold detachment that no doubt chilled the blood of investigators, she spoke of finding the gun, loading it, testing it, then turning it upon her helpless children. It would be 2 weeks before she could offer the slightest hint of emotion in discussing her crime. Dr. Giese, who continued to treat her, said the plan to murder her children came to her in an instant that morning, and that she carried it out in a daze. Even months later, she continued to insist that the children were better dead than alive, and expressed no grief over the tragedy. It's a sad, upsetting story. I mean, I warned you. And it ends with another bizarre and disturbing twist. By December of 1914, Florence had made what appeared to be a full physical recovery, and Sheriff E.T. Mass took her into custody through a formal indictment and arrest warrant had not been issued. Before the trial began, the district attorney transported Florence to Portland for a surgical procedure that had been recommended by Dr. Giese. We don't know much about the operation, which took place at Good Samaritan Hospital on December 2nd. It appears to be some early form of psychosurgery, such as a lobotomy, in which the connections are severed in the frontal lobes of the patient's brain, though it would be over 20 years before the first lobotomy would be performed here in the U.S. A short item in the December 4th edition of the Oregonian noted that Florence was still at Good Sam and progressing well. It was the last time she would ever be mentioned, suggesting that she and her husband moved out of the state or at least stop talking to the newspapers. Later speculation would suggest that it was her lonely existence in the small, isolated cabin, her constant brooding over her difficult childhood as an orphan, and her desire to spare her children, especially her daughter, from a similar fate that led her to do what she did. Truth is, we'll never know.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. I miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hair and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart, and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby in Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.